You've heard the headlines. Get some perspective now with Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
And a good morning to you. A happy Wednesday. There is another caravan, large group of migrants headed to our southern border.
The Lead. Brought to you by Burge Ford off the US 60 and Mesa Drive.
Yeah, Bruce, it's being called the March of the Migrant, or like you described, it's more like a caravan. But the crowd of about 1,300 migrants from Honduras is now more than doubled as they've crossed into Guatemala on their way to the U.S. border. One migrant telling reporters, "We're going to drop in on Donald Trump. He has to take us." The president this morning tweeting, "Not so fast." Trump says he has informed the leaders of Honduras, Guatemala, and El Salvador that if they allow this to continue, all payments made to their countries will stop.
Yeah, so I guess we have to go back and take a look at the, kind of the geography of the area, because this group, it has been described, I've seen a low of 1,300, a high of 3,000, if you will. So a sizable group of people coming from Honduras north through Guatemala and then would continue into Mexico and ostensibly make it to our southern border, Texas, Arizona, California, unclear as to where. We've seen this before, Pamela.
Oh, yeah. This is not the first rodeo
caravan of migrants, men, women, and children fleeing. For a variety of reasons, some purely economic, they can't support a family in their country. Some, I'm assuming, based on what we've learned at the border, are planning to make some sort of a claim for asylum, that their lives are in danger in some way, shape, or form if they stay in the country. Either way, they're coming.
Well, our KTAR news department has done a fantastic job of really diving into the Guatemalans that have been released here from ICE. Remember, they've been going to the churches in town. And we heard from an exclusive interview with ICE that down in Guatemala, I say advertising, you know, they've been on their TV news reports about, hey, go to the United States and you can seek
asylum.
Come
to America.
Right?
Yes, yes.
And so that's contributing to the rise of the amount of people coming to the border. And when we were talking about this, Bruce, I said, how long before Honduras and El Salvador get wind of this,
that they're exploiting, this message gets around,
exploiting the loopholes in the American asylum policy? Because as somebody who seeks asylum versus a border crosser, I've always said it's different, but what we're seeing is they're kind of the same, at least right now.
Yeah, and it's not 100% clear. What I can't get from it is kind of the motivation and how are these groups. I know there's charitable organizations or what do you want to call them? Migrants' rights groups that are helping coordinate this, because to get this many people kind of moving as a unit through multiple countries over, what is it, 1,000 miles or more? I mean, that takes some coordination.
Absolutely.
That isn't just like a couple people in the neighborhood got together and go, hey, let's put backpacks on and start walking the United States.
But you also talked about how some of them are seeking asylum for reasons that the United States would typically provide asylum. You're afraid of persecution. You're afraid of death in your own country. MS-13, for instance, right?
I've heard
gang.
That. Yes,
right.
You've heard of that.
But as our reporters have dug in and talked to some of the individuals from Guatemala who've been at churches here right in Phoenix, it seems the overwhelming reason why they have come to the United States is economical. It's not from the reasons you would typically seek asylum.
That your life is in danger, you've been targeted by the government or a gang or something.
Now,
like
is that happening? Yes,
I'm
absolutely
sure it
it's happening.
Yeah,
but it doesn't seem to be the overwhelming reason why. This morning, the president reacting to news of this March of the Migrant, the caravan that has gone through Honduras into Guatemala. Now, when they got to Guatemala, there were Guatemalan police in black uniforms, wearing helmets, shields. They tried to block these migrants from getting to the custom booths, but not exactly sure how long that standoff actually lasted, and the group was ultimately able to cross and march Here's what the president is saying this morning about this developing situation.
Right now, a caravan of more than 1,000 people from Central America is heading toward the United States and heading straight for a showdown with the president of the United States. President Trump tweeting this: "We have today informed the countries of Honduras, Guatemala, and El Salvador that if they allow their citizens or others to journey through their borders and up to the United States with the intention of entering our country illegally, all payments made to them will stop."
So the threat is if these Central American countries don't stop these people from traversing through their countries, we are going to cut off aid or economic whatever monies we're sending to them. I can make the argument ostensibly making the situation worse, which would mean more people would want to leave.
Okay, but how do you make the situation better? Something has to be done. This is not okay. You can't just have this porous border where some 2,000 people get an idea down in Honduras, Guatemala, and El Salvador to make their way to the United States and us do nothing about it.
Yeah, it strikes me as a pay me now, pay me later issue. We have to acknowledge that we are the ones who eventually end up with the problem at our doorstep or in our country.
Our border,
Okay. You can choose to deal with it at the border, mm-hmm. or you can choose to deal with it in their home country. But you have to choose to deal with it.
But what do you mean? What do you mean by dealing with it in their home country?
If the United States worked with Guatemala, Honduras, El Salvador, insert Central American country that migrants are leaving by the busload to come to the United States, and made it so that those people didn't feel they had to leave their country, would that be money well spent? If we invested in making Guatemala and invested in, and I don't know what the answer is. Let me put it this way. Again, pay me now, pay me later. Do you want to invest in Guatemala, making Guatemala a place that Guatemalans don't want to leave? Or do you want to try to stop them from getting into our southern border and making a claim, going through our court system, ending up with Customs Border Patrol, being released into the public and disappearing into the country? You get to choose one or the other, but you can't have neither.
Okay, folks, I hear you yelling at your radio right now.
Can't have neither.
So I'll say it for you. Bruce, why is it our responsibility as the United States of America mm-hmm. to make Guatemala, Honduras, and El Salvador a better place for their own people to live?
Otherwise, they come here. Which one do you want? Pick one. I don't care which one you pick. But them not coming here isn't one of the options, as we have seen. They don't care what the law is. They don't care about child separation. They don't care about people killing them along the way. The beast, the train, how dangerous the journey is. None of that is a deterrent to how bad it must be. I'm making the assumption as
separating your children from you.
And why a mom, a dad, and a three-year-old would try to walk to the United States. I cannot imagine what they think they're trying to escape. But we can either deal with it in their home country, or we can deal with it in our country, but not dealing with it isn't one of the options.
This is how the president says he is going to deal with it if they do reach our border.
The president also warning that any of those migrants who enter the United States will be arrested and sent back.
That's not what the law provides for. Sorry, he can say that. Again, a dictator would say something like that. Not a dictator. The courts have already said, no, they can make their asylum claim. They get to go before first off, they're interviewed by Customs, interviewed by ICE. We hear the statistics. Just last week, Martha Maurer spoke to the head. 80 to 90% pass the first stage that they have some sort of a...
They get a hearing then.
They get to go in front of a judge. Mm-hmm. They are released until they get to that. So we have a system right now. You cannot like it. I get it. I don't think the system's good.
So is that what has to happen? Is that the logical solution, is changing that system? Is there a stomach for that right now? You look at how partisan politics have become with an issue that is really impacting our country, and specifically right here in Arizona. Do our politicians that we are going to be voting into office in just a few short weeks, do they have the stomach to change that broken system?
I'm assuming that was a rhetorical question.
Yeah, kind of, man.
Because I think we all know the answer. Well, they are coming. Legally, they will have a quote-unquote day in court, most of them.
So frustrating.
We cannot stop them from coming. unless we do something to stop them before they get on their journey, i.e., why leave Guatemala? You have opportunity here. Or there's, it's not worth it for you to leave Guatemala. We have to, and again, pick your poison.
I don't like poison. I don't like it.
You either
I don't want to drink either one of them.
You either make them not want to leave Guatemala.
They're both sucky choices.
Or you deal with them when they are released into the public here in the United States.
I'll take what's behind door number three.
Well, there is no door number three in this one right now. There is not a door number three. You get to choose one of the two. But one of them's happening. Convicted felon and former sheriff Joe Arpaio is back in the news. He is suing, I tell you, suing the fake news failing New York Times for $147 million. Okay. The Arizona Morning News' producer Jeremy Foster just spoke to the sheriff. We're going to talk about that lawsuit and what's behind it.
Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
This morning, we learn that former Maricopa County Sheriff and convicted felon, Joe Arpaio, has filed a libel suit against the New York Times and specifically a member of its editorial board.
Okay, libel. What is libel?
I'm not sure.
That is a published false statement that is damaging to a person's reputation.
Got it.
It's written defamation. I just think it's important that we start knowing what
you write
what
it down
it
and you
is.
Publish it. That is the definition of libel. It's basically confined to people that publish things.
All right. So joining us right now is Jeremy Foster from the KTAR News Department. And we've pulled Jeremy, and because just moments ago, as we were getting ready to get on the air, you had a very interesting interview. You were talking with Joe Arpaio, right? Jeremy, what did he have to say about this lawsuit?
Yeah, I reached out to him around 7 this morning, and he called me back literally right before
just
9
minutes
o'clock.
Minutes ago, right?
On the air, yeah. And so, you know, I wanted to start, obviously, when you have a lawsuit of that size and those kind of claims, I started off, I said, hey, Sheriff Joe, why did you decide to sue the New York Times?
I have my reputation to salvage after 55 years of dedicated service. So I'm filing that lawsuit, and somebody has to take on the New York Times. I'm willing to do it.
Yeah, and there were certain things he didn't want to get into, some of the specifics, because, you know, he said, well, a lot of things I'm going to have to refer to my lawyer, Larry Klayman, because I haven't even seen the press release yet. So he didn't want to go into too many details, just kind of an overall
broad, yeah.
Right,
because
he didn't want to do anything to potentially damage his case.
Okay, but you're talking about libel, which is false statements damaging to your reputation. So what was in the New York Times op-ed that was false.
Libelous.
And damaging to your reputation. And he wasn't willing to answer any of those questions?
There were a lot of the specifics he wanted to go through his attorney. So we'll contact
you're reaching
his
out to the attorney.
Right.
Okay.
We'll reach out to the attorney. But basically, false assertions. He did feel like that you know, after he said, after 55 years, this could hurt my standing. And we saw, and then there's court documents too, but, you know, it could hurt his standing among Republican donors, which makes you think, wow, maybe he still thinks he has a future in politics. So
well,
I asked him about
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I asked him about that. Yeah.
You know, you never say never in politics. Some people said I lost this last election. Yeah, I came in late, had no money, and it was a tough road. They remember, only about one-third of the people voted.
Okay. Those that vote didn't vote for you, though. You finished third out of three. So he is – part of his lawsuit is – that he thinks he still has a political career, and that if he runs for office in the future, these comments that the New York Times made would damage a run down the road.
Correct.
For whatever political, office.
Right, and you saw, I think we saw it was potentially McCain's seat in 2020 that has been rumored. So, you know, there's that. And also something I thought was interesting is $147.5 million.
Yeah.
That's a lot of money.
It is a lot of money.
Where do you come up with that number, too? $147.5 million. Round it up to 148.
That's exactly what I asked him.
I don't know. That's the lawyer. That may be what they're worth, the paper is worth. So I don't know where he came up with it, but I'm sure he had a reason to. I'm not overly concerned about the money. The money's not the issue with me.
Wow. I don't even know what to make of this.
I, you know, the idea that convicted felon Joe Arpaio thinks that he has a good name. Can I just point out that his concern about his standing and again his good name, his reputation. Earlier this week, he was at a campaign rally for a Nevada pimp and brothel owner, Dennis Hoff. He spoke at it, where he shared the stage with porn actor Ron Jeremy. I could make the argument that you're doing a hell of a job of crafting whatever damage to your reputation perfectly on your own, without the New York Times involved in the slightest.
Is that a joke? Is that serious?
That's dead serious.
And no, then, that's, he was.
And
no,
then Dennis Hoff.
I actually talked.
Dennis Hoff passed away shortly that evening after that campaign.
I did talk to him about that, and you know, he said they were at a dinner, and
Flav was there as well.
He said I saw him about 10 o'clock at night, and he said
he passed away sometime that evening.
He said he seemed just fine, and he was surprised. He said, you know, this guy he's really popular in Nevada, and he had a really good chance to win his race. He said, if he wins, because he's still going to be on the, he said he's still going to be on the ballot. Yeah. So if he wins, it's going to be interesting to see what the Republican Party in Nevada does.
Wow. I just did not expect this segment to go like brothel and Ron Jeremy and Joe Arpaio.
That's what Jim was saying during Arizona's morning news. Yeah. What happens when you cross Arizona politics with Nevada politics?
Boom.
A pimp, a sheriff, and a porn star.
Oh my goodness. You can't make this stuff up. Flavor.
You had Arpaio. You had Ron Jeremy.
This is a joke.
Heidi Fleiss.
Seriously.
The madam, was it New York madam? They were all at this event.
Wow. Jeremy Foster.
But the New York Times is ruining Joe's reputation, by the way.
From the KTAR newsroom, just getting off the phone there with Joe Arpaio. We appreciate you sharing that interview with us. Yeah. And when they talk to the attorney about what specifically are they upset about, we'll bring you that information as well.
Yeah. Today is the day for Canadians. Marijuana, recreational marijuana, is now legal all across Canada. So what does that mean for us here in the United States? We'll talk about it next.
KTAR News on 92.3 FM. Get some perspective. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes.
I feel like it's the start of a hockey game, eh? Are we playing the Maple Leafs, eh? Okay. We're talking about Canada because in Canada today, people are cheering. They're honking their horns in the street.
Or they're just, you know, chilling.
Shortly after, followed by a bag of Cheetos or Funyuns, because marijuana, recreational marijuana, is now legal everywhere in Canada.
Canada, now the largest country to legalize marijuana. Bruce Linton, the CEO of Canopy Growth, a Canadian marijuana company, is in Newfoundland to make one of the first retail sales.
We're selling this as dried cannabis, some oils.
He says he thinks Canada will become a model for other countries.
A bunch of countries are going to say, we've got to quit ignoring, to the benefit of criminals, the regulation and education related to medical or non-medical, you know, recreational cannabis.
U.S. border officials, meanwhile, reiterating that marijuana is still illegal under federal law on this side of the border.
Yeah, that's kind of an important distinction to make.
Yeah.
You know, you had the prime minister there, Justin Trudeau, during an election pledge some 3 years ago that said, yeah, we want to make pot legal in Canada. And this morning, that promise has been fulfilled. But depending on where you're going, you know, if you're going to go to Quebec or if you're going to go to Montreal, they've got different regulations.
Legalization is basically going to be a patchwork approach, with each province having its own regulations and retail systems. Some have taken a relaxed approach, allowing people to smoke pot in public and for private companies to sell it, while others have taken a more restrictive stance, saying you can only consume the drug in a private residence and it can only be sold in government-run stores. Most provinces ban the consumption of the drug near areas frequented by children, such as playgrounds. The largest province, Ontario, won't even have storefront sales right away, beginning with only online purchasing before easing into the retail market.
So it's a patchwork of rules, all of them still being as opposed to it being legal everywhere. Maybe a better way to put it, it's been decriminalized.
Yeah, you know, as I heard,
possession is not going to put you in jail.
As I heard that, I just had to smile because, you know, right, even though we're making pot legal everywhere in Canada, man. We do have some standards, man. And so, like, you can't smoke up at a playground.
Yeah,
or
but
a
you can
school,
have a pack of Marlboros and a fifth of Jack Daniels. You're
right?
Fine there, right?
Oh.
Canadian club.
Club.
So there are some things you need to know. Number one,
what do I need to know?
If you visit Canada. Okay, and a lot of Americans go up there. They enjoy, Victoria or Vancouver or whatnot. You cannot bring marijuana back.
What if I've got leftovers?
Does it matter? And by the way, they said it doesn't even matter if you're traveling from Canada to a place in the United States that's legal, like Colorado. Leave Arizona out of it. You still can't bring it back across the border, full stop, period.
You can't bring your Canadian weed to Colorado.
Even though weed is legal in Colorado and weed is legal in Canada, you cannot transport it between the two.
I can't take my Colorado weed and take it to Canada either.
No.
No. Okay.
Here's something that's kind of interesting, and think about what they probably, these kind of rules of unintended consequences.
Yeah, what's that?
U.S. Customs and Border Patrol can permanently bar a visitor to the United States if the agent believes that person has participated in illegal drug trafficking. And under Customs and Border Patrol rules, anyone who works in Canada's legal marijuana industry fits the definition of a drug trafficker. So if you work the counter at the legal marijuana store in Quebec, you could be barred from entering the United States because, in our view, our laws see you as a drug trafficker.
You know what else? They're also worried, eh?
Okay.
About a shortage of legal weed.
They're literally running out. No, there's like lines at stores, and they're worried about running out, which means more of a black market, if you think about it.
Yeah.
Here's something, though. As we get surrounded by, like, we talked about Arizona and the fact that California, Colorado, like, we're surrounded by
Nevada.
States with legal marijuana. And how hard is it to go and purchase it there and drive into Arizona with your legal weed, right? I know it's quote unquote against the law, but, you know, it's not like we have border checkpoints anymore. When you're going from California into Arizona, where they stop you and search your car, like, we don't do that, right? I don't know how many of you have been up and seen the Canadian border. It is not like the Mexican border. The Mexican border, we do have walls, we have fences in some places, we have border patrol patrolling the border. Do you know what I'm saying? We've got aerial drones. We've got the blimps. We've got thousands of men and women patrolling our southern border. There's like two guys patrolling the entire Canadian border. It's the same length. It's longer than the Mexican border. There's like two people for the whole thing. You get Washington State and Montana. I'll get the Dakotas to Maine. Okay? And they just split the difference. And there isn't in some cases, there isn't a fence or a wall. You can walk into Canada and walk back into the United States. We don't patrol it the same.
So Canada is now the first major industrialized country to fully decriminalize cannabis, you know, just for recreational use. Started this morning. Lines have been forming for a while now, right? But how does this impact us here in the United States? Beyond the, you can walk into...
Easier to bring it into this country.
But it's also, so you looked at Arizona and how we are surrounded. You know, you've got California, Nevada, you go up a little bit further, Colorado. You start having these states that already have decriminalized marijuana. And I think eventually it's going to come here to Arizona. We've had several propositions. The last one failed narrowly. I think that eventually
it's going to pass, right?
So, okay, so we're looking at it from a state level. That's more of like a micro level. If you look at it from a macro level, having a country, one of our biggest allies,
who look
north
and
of our border,
sound a lot like us, except for A.
Then how is that going to have any impact on how Americans view that drug and how is it going to impact our laws here?
Think of it this way. You don't have to look far to see the social experiment about what will legalized marijuana look like in a Western civilized society.
Just look north of the border.
Canada will show us what it looks like, and you can look at it a year from now, 2 years from now, whatever it might be, and we'll have some data, good or bad.
Well, hey, you know what? I'm glad they're at least doing it first. We can learn from their mistakes.
There you go. They're the
guinea pigs.
The test subjects or guinea pigs, right? Texas high school students have to watch another video. Now, it's not sex ed this time. It's not red asphalt or something. No, no, no. It's a video of what to do when you get pulled over by the police.
Huh.
And I think it's a solid idea. We'll talk about it and play you some of that video coming up next.
The stars at night are big and bright.
Get some perspective. Bruce St. James and Pamela Hughes. KTAR News on 92.3 FM.
I don't need DNA testing to tell me I'm half Texan.
Okay.
My dad, born and raised in Texas. His family, born and raised in Texas. I'm half Texan on my dad's side. Half German on my mother's side.
Boy, that makes her a very interesting guy.
That it does. I like sauerkraut with barbecue sauce. And
ew, I think I just threw up in my mouth.
Yeah, actually, in hindsight, the fact that I just said that out loud makes me a little queasy. So, in the great state of Texas, they are attempting to, in some way, shape, or form, reduce the number of, what do I want to call them, tragic confrontations between police and, specifically, unarmed civilians.
So what they're doing right now is they've got something called the Community Safety Education Act. It was signed into law last year. Okay, so what the heck is that? Mm-hmm. Well, it requires any student going into the ninth grade this year and thereafter to take a class. And that class means you're going to watch a video on how to interact properly with officers during traffic stops.
Pastor, put your hands on the dash. Pastor.
Ma'am,
pastor,
put your hands on the dashboard, please. Thank you.
Thanks, Senator.
Driver, put your hands on the steering wheel. My name is Deputy Larry Hatch, Travis County Precinct 1.
Okay, it's not acted very well. It's a really bad
by the way,
of video,
it is,
but
yeah, it was produced by the law enforcement group, the Texas Commission on Law Enforcement produced the video. Again, we've tweeted it out. I think it's fair to say they spent literally dozens of dollars on this.
Dozens
of dollars on this stiffly poorly acted interaction between police, but putting aside the bad acting, for teens, for kids getting ready to get their driver's licenses, I think it actually it provides, maybe it's the common sense that we just don't teach anymore.
There's so many things in life as an adult, a young adult, whatever it may be, that you're expected to know that no one has ever taught you. And I go back and I think about this, and no one ever really taught me how to behave if I got pulled over. And I may have a time or two, you know. I learned through other people's mistakes. Working in the news department, even in college, I learned that, you know, what not to do because of how it can turn out poorly. And that if an officer pulls you over, put your hands on the steering wheel.
Mm-hmm. Keep your hands where you can see.
Yeah, just, and that kind of stopped there for me.
Okay,
like put your hands on the steering wheel. Over the years, I've learned if it's dark out, put on the dome light and put your hands on the steering wheel so that they can see inside the car.
Solid argument.
And then,
I was going to say, I have some as well. But
the other two is keep your hands on the steering wheel. And if the officer says, you know, license and registration, okay, I'm now going to reach into my purse or it's in the glove compartment. Mm-hmm. So you're communicating what you're doing. So it's not as though that officer feels threatened by your actions. No one ever taught me this. I had to learn through.
I learned it by talking to friends that are cops.
Yeah.
And you know, who said, hey, dude, like I had a SUV for a while. And it had the dark windows in the back of it. Do you know what I'm saying? And I had a cop friend tell me, like, we were driving around once, and he goes, dude, these things are scary. I go, well, what do you mean? The thing only does 55 miles an hour, you know, downhill.
And it guzzles gas.
Yeah, I was
going to
say,
how's it scary?
3 miles to the gallon. What's scaring you about this other than my trips to the gas station? And he said, we can't see in them, especially at night. He goes, it's not that your window tint is illegal, but there's just so much of it around here. Can't see shadows, can't see in there. And I said, so what am I supposed to do? And he said, honestly, he goes, you get pulled over at night. Dome light is a good start.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Roll the windows down. All four. He goes, put the windows down. And he says, because
nobody
it also
teaches you these things.
And here's what he said. Think about this. If you get pulled over, lights flashing, you were speeding, you went through a stoplight. It happens. And you pull over and you turn your dome light on and you put your windows down. The cop gets a message that you're aware of what's going on. And that you're not trying to be sneaky.
You're communicating through your actions in a positive way.
Now, they're still going to be cautious when they approach the car, as well they should. They're smart. They have to play worst case scenario. But we aren't teaching kind of these basic things, especially to new drivers. I actually credit the state of Texas with taking a step in the right direction about what does it look like when police interact with you when you get pulled over for speeding.
Yeah, and we know that this could be a life and death situation for both officers as well as passengers and misinterpretation of action. So I think it's really great that Texas is doing that. But I also think that schools should probably also have a video on like compounding interest on credit card rates. Like there are so many different like life videos.
The real world that you need to learn, not differential equations.
All right. So chime in on our open mic line. What do you think about Texas teaching kids how to behave if they're pulled over by police? And then also, what other videos do you think you should have gotten and learned in high school? 602-200-2733. It's our open mic line. 602-200-2733.
What they didn't teach you in high school. That's a long list. We've got a list of the top 100 universities in the United States where student applications are on the rise. And you're probably going to be familiar with, but maybe a little surprised by who's number one on the list. We'll share it with you. It's coming up next on Arizona's News Station.